After the three visitors had been fed bowls of an excellent stew full of chunks of venison and wild onions, Crazy Bear asked Preacher to stay in his teepee, and the old man agreed. Smoke and Matt were taken to lodges they could use as long as they were staying in the Crow Village. Matt was tired from the strain of the afternoon-long siege in the hot cabin. He was looking forward to stretching out on that thick bearskin robe and getting some sleep. He had taken off his hat, gun belt, and boots and was unbuttoning his shirt when the entrance flap on the teepee was pushed back and a buckskin-clad figure ducked inside.
Well, I seem to remember another time when you burst in unannounced like that. You were the one who took off your shirt that time, though.
Then it is true. You have come back to help us, Matt Jensen.
That's right. Preacher and Smoke and I are all here to do what we can to keep Bannerman from forcing your people off their land. It won't happen if we have anything to say about it.
People have been wounded, including my father.
We talked to Crazy Bear and to your brother Sandy. Did you know he'd filed papers with the government claiming this whole part of the valley?
He told me, and I told him he was mad. No white man's court is ever going to say an Indian owns land another white man wants.
I wouldn't be so sure. Anyway, Sandy's only half Crow, just like you.
You truly think the fact that my mother is a gypsy will help? According to her, in many places her people are looked down on and scorned, just like the Indians.
Well, that may be true, but the law is the law. Not only that, and I'm not boasting here, Smoke and I both know some folks who might be able to help us. The governor of Colorado has already called on the territorial governor up here in Wyoming to launch an investigation. Smoke's been in touch with his lawyers in Denver, and he can call in favors from some of those railroad barons if he needs to. He's given them a hand in times past.
All this talk of politicians and lawyers, it means nothing where Bannerman's hired killers are concerned.
Smoke and Preacher and I will deal with them if we have to.
Three men against 50 or 60? What can three men do?
Depends on who they are, I reckon.
You mean to do this, don't you? To risk your lives for my father and his people.
We've already done that. We had a run-in with Bannerman's gunnies this afternoon. We've already taken cards in this game, Starwin. There's no choice now but to play it out to the end.
Even if it costs you your lives. Matt.
He put his arms around her and drew her to him. The next morning, Smoke, Matt, and Preacher rode across a broad meadow covered with lush green grass. It was so tall that in places it brushed the bellies of their horses. About half a mile ahead of them twisted a line of trees that marked the course of the creek. Between them and the creek were close to 100 cattle. Though Smoke wasn't close enough to see the brands, he would bet money each of those cows wore the Circle B.
We'll split up and start to gather.
I ain't never set out to be no dang cowpuncher. It ain't a fitting job for a real man.
That's right. Working cattle ties you down in one place too much. I'd rather drift on whenever the notion hits me.
That's fine for a couple of irresponsible hombres like you two, but where would the world be if everybody felt like that?
It'd be a damn sight less complicated, I can tell you that.
Keep your eyes open. Bannerman would be a fool not to have any riders up in these parts.
The three men spread out as they approached the cattle. Cows began trudging in the direction the men wanted them to go. It was noisy work, and Smoke knew he might not be able to hear hoofbeats of approaching horses. For that reason, he kept his eyes moving all the time, searching the landscape around them for any sign of Bannerman's men. He saw the four riders coming when they were still several hundred yards away on the other side of the creek. Cattle were all converging. Smoke could see Preacher in the middle. He turned his horse and galloped toward the old mountain man. A Smoke rode up and fell in alongside Preacher. He saw Matt coming from the other direction. He figured that the younger man had spotted their impending company as well.
I see him. More Bannerman's gun wolves, you reckon?
Maybe not all of them. A couple could be regular punchers, but I'm betting the other two are gun hands. Can't ignore the cowboys either. They're probably plenty tough. And if they ride for the brand, they'll likely fight to defend it.
Like trouble's coming.
I'm ready for it. Hell, it's been more than 12 hours since anybody shot at me.
Cattle stopped when they reached the creek. clumping up along the bank. Smoke, Matt, and Preacher rode around the herd to the north and reined in at the edge of the stream. The four men on the other side of the creek rode toward them and halted on the opposite bank.
What the hell do you think you're doing? Those are Circle B cows. You ain't got no right to move them.
You're right about them being Circle B cows, and they don't have any right to be over here on Crow Land.
Crow Land? What in blazes are you talking about? This is open range. And even if it wasn't, it sure don't belong to no damn Redskins.
That's where you're wrong. You're gonna have to push these cattle back across to the other side of Badger Creek, the upper section of the valley. From Turtle Rock north and west of Badger Creek belongs to Sander Little Bear, son of the Crow Chief Crazy Bear, and is being held in trust for the entire band of Crow led by Crazy Bear.
You're out of your damn mind. Injuns can't own land.
You're wrong about that. Just because most of them don't, doesn't mean they can't.
So the Redskins have hired themselves some gunnies.
We're not working for the Crow. They're our friends. We're just trying to help them do what's right.
I'll tell you what's right. You get the hell away from them cows and leave them be. That's what's right.
You can move them, or we'll finish the job we started. It's up to you.
What the hell kind of man takes up for a bunch of filthy Injuns?
Name Smoke Jensen. That's Matt Jensen. And the old-timer is Preacher.
You, might have heard tell of us.
Go to hell!
The man's hand streaked for his gun. The other three went for their pistols as well. They were fast, but not fast enough.
Them boys was damn fools, but hell, you tried to tell them.
We're gonna push these cows on across the creek?
And across Badger Creek as well. We won't stop until they're back on Bannerman's usual range.
The three of them got the cattle moving again, prodding the beasts into splashing across the shallow creek. It was a half a mile from that creek, if it had a name, Smoke had never heard it, to the slightly large Badger Creek that marked the eastern boundary of the Crow hunting grounds. The herd covered that distance fairly quickly. Bannerman and his men hadn't shown up by the time Smoke, Matt, and Preacher finished driving the cattle across Badger Creek.
We'll leave these cows here and see if we can find more on the wrong side of the creek.
In other words, we'll try to hunt up some more trouble.
That all right with you?
Sure. Bannerman's gonna have a small army up here before you know it.
We'll deal with that when and if it happens.
You let me find a good high spot. Me and that sharps of mine will settle this problem once and for all.
Killing Bannerman like that won't solve anything. Anyway, Preacher, you're not a bushwhacker.
Well, maybe not. Sometimes it sure is tempting, though. Come on, let's head back to Crazy Bear's village.
That sounds good to me. Mala makes a mighty fine pot of stew, and I could use some more of it right about now.
I'd like to see Starwind again, too.
Yeah, old Crazy Bear gonna have another youngin' marrying up outside the tribe if he don't watch out.
Marry? Me and Starwind? Not hardly. She doesn't have any interest in getting married, and neither do I. It'll be a long time before I'm ready to be tied down like...
Like me? Do you see me sitting in a rocking chair on the front porch?
Well, Smoke, if I can say it, you're not a normal man, and Sally's not exactly a typical woman either.
I can't argue that with you. Especially the last part about Sally. Looks like trouble coming.
Matt and Preacher had spotted the distant riders in the same instant. What looked like at least 30 men were coming fast up the valley.
Do we stand and fight?
Against 10-1 odds.
Well, wouldn't be the first time.
No. But there's a lot riding on us. We can't afford to get ourselves killed this soon. Come on, we'll make a run for it.
Back to Crazy Bear's village?
No. We don't want a pitched battle, and that's what we'll get if Bannerman follows us all the way to the village, as mad as he must be right now. We'll lead him away from there.
Split up! We'll rendezvous at the base of the big bluff.
The rocky bluff was visible in the distance above the trees, shouldering a good 100 feet in the air. The three of them veered apart as more rifle slugs sizzled hotly through the air around them. Trees were getting thicker, and in moments, Smoke couldn't see Matt and Preacher anymore. Smoke continued making his way through the timber and up the slope. He reached the top of the ridge and cut north along it, away from Matt and Preacher. Smoke slowed his horse to a walk and started up a gully. Then he dismounted and left his horse in the gully. He scrambled up the bank and pressed his back against the thick trunk of a pine. The The searchers were coming closer. Smoke took off his hat, edged an eye around the tree trunk, and had a look. He saw three men moving past about 20 feet away.
Looking for somebody, boys?
The three gunmen wheeled their horses frantically, clawing at their guns as they did so. Smoothly, Smoke drew both of his 44s. Quickly, Smoke swung up into the saddle and got moving again. He reached the upper end of the gully. He rode into a field of boulders that stretched for half a mile before he came to another timber-covered hillside. There'd been a fire there in the distant past, and a lot of deadfalls littered the slope. Smoke let his horse have its head, and the animal picked its way through the debris. Smoke hoped that when he finally made it to the towering bluff that was his destination, Matt and Preacher would be there waiting for him. Preacher sent horse up a slope of loose shale. He jabbed his heels into horse's flanks and sent the animal lunging over the top of the ridge. Wheeling his mount around, he brought the Winchester to his shoulder. Preacher turned horse and rode hard along the crest of the ridge, hoping that the rangy gray had good footing. Horse took the slope in a half slide, half run, Preacher swaying in the saddle, keeping his seat with the expert grace of a much younger man. Just as he reached the bottom, two more men rode out of some trees just a few yards to Preacher's right. The old mountain man never slowed down. He kept going, disappearing into the trees almost as if he had never been there, leaving behind the bodies of two dead gunnies to prove he had been there. Matt caught glimpses of the tall bluff through the trees and kept working his way toward it. He hadn't heard any sounds of pursuit for a while, and it was beginning to look like he had given Bannerman's hired killers the slip. He knew he shouldn't think like that. It was bound to jinx things. And that was the first thing that went through his head when the three riders came out from behind a boulder and blocked the trail ahead of him. The second thing was a shock of recognition as he realized one of the men was Lou Torrance. The other two reached for their guns.
Hold it!
Two hard cases looked surprised, but their hands froze on the butts of their guns. Matt stiffened in the saddle, and his muscles were tense with the urge to draw too, but he held off. He waited to see what Torrance was up to.
After that dust-up last year, I didn't figure I'd ever see you again, Jensen.
You saw me yesterday when you and some of Bannerman's other hired killers chased Smoke and Preacher and me into that cabin and tried to kill us.
Yeah, well, I thought that was you, but I wasn't sure. You shouldn't have come back to the valley. There are things going on here that are none of your business.
I'm making them my business, and so are Smoke and Preacher.
I don't want to kill you, Jensen. We fought side by side, and I'd just as soon not be the one to send you to hell. So I'm going to ride away and leave you to these boys. If by some chance you happen to survive, well, I reckon there'll be another day for the two of us to settle things.
Count on it.
Torrance smiled lazily and turned his horse. Matt sat there stiffly as the hoofbeats faded. Then the other two men went for their guns. They never had a chance. Matt holstered his gun and got spirit moving again. He rode around the dead man and continued on toward the bluff. He hoped Preacher and Smoke were all right, but he didn't worry. Worrying didn't do any good. Either they were alive or they weren't. Knowing Smoke and Preacher the way he did, Matt would have bet a fine new hat that they were still alive and kicking. There was a broad clearing in the pines at the base of the bluff. Up close, Smoke could see the big seams and cracks that split the face of the rock, and at the bottom of it lay several giant slabs of rock that had broken off and fallen over the years. An hombre would have to think twice about getting too close up there. Having all that rock looming over him was bound to make him a mite nervous. Smoke's mouth tightened when he looked around and didn't see Matt or Preacher. He reined in and studied the clearing. It was empty, sure enough. No sign that anyone had been there.
The hills were quiet. No shots had sounded for a while. Smoke hadn't seen any of Bannerman's men since the shootout with the three he had killed. Then movement in the trees on the other side of the clearing caught his eye. He pulled his horse back into the timber and drew his rifle from his sheath. Only relaxing as Matt rode into sight. Smoke moved into the open and waved the Winchester over his head. Matt trotted the sorrel over to him.
Man, it's good to see you, Smoke. I figured you'd be here, but after hearing all those shots scattered over the hills, I'm glad to lay eyes on you.
Same here. Have you seen Preacher?
No, but I'm sure he'll turn up. That old-timer's made of wang leather and barbed wire. Still be around when you and I are pushing up daisies.
I wouldn't doubt it. Still, it'll be good to see him.
Smoke stopped short as Preacher rode out of the trees behind him. Go on, tell me more about how you'll be glad to see me. I'm starting to feel plumb sentimental back here. You want me to take my hat off so you can plant a kiss on this old bald head of mine?
As I was saying, it'll be good to see him because that way we'll know the old rapscallion hasn't gone and gotten himself in some sort of trouble we'd have to rescue him from. Again.
Oh, rescue me? You rescue me? When's the last time you had to pull my bacon out of the fire, boy?
What's our next move?
Some of Bannerman's gunhawks are probably still between us and Crazy Bear's village. Instead of going back there, why don't we head for Buffalo Flat?
What are we gonna do there?
I'd sort of like to see if any of those visits Matt and I made before we started up here have done any good. I've got a hunch that beating Bannerman is gonna take more than bullets.
The telegraph lines had reached Buffalo Flat in the months since Matt had been there. It wasn't the only change in town, which had grown quite a bit since Smoke had been there last, but it was the one that interested him the most at the moment. As soon as he spotted the telegraph office, he headed straight for it. He had told his lawyers in Denver that he could be contacted there if they had any news about the investigation into Bannerman's dealings. He had told his lawyers in Denver that he could be contacted there if they had any news about their investigations into Bannerman's dealings. Madam Preacher stayed outside while Smoke went into the office. He had to wait while a man in a town suit talked to the clerk.
Are you sure Mr. Jensen hasn't been in to check for messages?
Sorry, mister. I ain't seen the fella.
As the man turned away from the window with a scowl on his face, Smoke stayed right where he was, planted directly in the stranger's path.
Excuse me, I need to get by.
No, you need to tell me which Jensen you're looking for.
The man regarded him coolly. He was wearing an expensive town suit, but he had a rough-hewn look about him like he hadn't always sported such fancy duds. He was tall and brawny, with a shock of red hair under his hat.
What business is it of yours who I'm looking for?
Because my name is Jensen. Kirby Jensen, usually called Smoke.
Mr. Jensen, my name is Halliday. I was sent up here from Denver by your lawyers to find you.
You're an attorney?
An investigator. I have some news for you regarding... Well, not here. Can you come with me to my hotel room?
All right. Matt and Preacher are with me.
Halliday nodded, obviously knowing who Smoke was talking about.
Bring them along. All of you need to hear this.
They left their horses tied in front of the hotel and followed Halliday up to his room on the second floor.
Tell us what the investigation found out.
Well, nothing good, I'm afraid. The trail of Bannerman's connections runs all the way back to Washington.
To the Department of the Interior?
Among others, including the Capitol. Gentlemen, Mr. Bannerman has some friends in high places. Very high places. I'm talking about politicians, judges, bankers, railroad men, the sort of men who believe they actually run this country. Unfortunately, in most cases, they're right. Have you heard of the Indian Ring?
I've heard of them. A bunch of damn crooks that took over the Bureau of Indian Affairs for a while. They had some high-powered political backing, but they were broken up several years ago, weren't they?
Well, that's right. Some of the principals managed to avoid indictment, and they've never forgotten how much money there is to be made off the Indians. It appears they're trying to put together a new Indian ring, and Reese Bannerman has been selected as their first standard bearer.
What in blazes are you talking about, mister?
He means that if Bannerman gets away with stealing the Crow's land, it'll just be the first step. members of this so-called Indian Ring will start grabbing Indian land all over the West, taking it by force if they have to.
And that's right. Bannerman's land grab is a test case, so to speak.
I still don't understand. Folks have been stealing Indian land for years now, and they usually pretend that it's all legal-like because of broken treaties and whatnot.
Yes, but if the men behind this have their way, they won't even bother doing that anymore. They'll just take the land and dare anyone to do anything about it. I've heard rumors they won't stop there. The ultimate goal seems to be the destruction of all Indian tribes west of the Mississippi.
It's crazy. They can't do that.
They might be able to do it with an army backing them. There are still some Indian wars going on in places.
We've never tried to wipe out whole tribes.
Oh, hell no. We just force them onto reservations where they might as well be dead.
Smoke knew that Preacher's keen feelings on the subject stemmed from his having spent so much time with the Indians over the decades, sometimes living with them for years at a stretch.
I reckon we can argue about whether they can get away with it all we want to, but the important thing is that if they try, there'll be a hell of a lot of blood spilled along the way, no matter how things turn out.
That's exactly right. So the thing to do would be to deal them a setback right now, so they'll think again before they try anything else. However, that's not what my employers are advising, Mr. Jensen.
What do they think we ought to do?
The firm has concluded that Bannerman and his associates are too powerful to oppose. Their official advice is that you don't try.
Give up! What the hell kind of lawyers you got, Smoke?
It wouldn't be ethical of them to advise a client to go against his best interests.
What about the best interests of Crazy Bear and his people?
They're not clients.
You said that was the official advice. What about some unofficial advice?
Unofficially? I've learned that a federal judge is on his way here to Buffalo Flat even as we speak to rule on the matter of whether or not the Crow have a valid claim to the land. He should be coming in on tomorrow's stagecoach. Someone named Sander Littlebear wrote and requested a hearing more than a month ago. He must have known this showdown was coming.
What good will it do to have a hearing if everybody connected to Washington is on the side of the Indian Ring?
Well, not everyone is. This particular circuit court judge isn't. He has a reputation as an honest man, and if he rules against Bannerman, it'll be a blow to the ring. His name is Judge Errol Starr.
Does Bannerman know about this?
He does. A lawyer sent out here by the Indian Ring came in on the same stagecoach I did a few days ago. He'll be representing Bannerman.
So what do we need to do?
Matt, you and Preacher ought to head back out to Crazy Bear's village. Sandy's the one making the claim on the land, and if anything happens to him, this case will fall apart. Bannerman has to know that, so he's liable to take things into his own hands again and try to get rid of Sandy before the judge can get here. To do that, he's got to attack the entire village. So he may decide just to wipe it off the face of the earth and be done with it.
He could probably get away with it, too, if he's got such all-fired, powerful friends.
I don't know the man, but based on what I've heard, I wouldn't put anything past him.
What about you, Smoke?
We've seen plenty of evidence that Bannerman doesn't want to take a chance on the case being heard by a judge. If he knows this fellow Starr is on his way to Buffalo Flat, he might send some of his men to stop him. The judge can't rule against Bannerman if he's dead. So Halliday and I will ride out in the morning and meet the stagecoach to make sure it gets here safely.
I don't recall volunteering my services, Jensen. How do you know I can even ride?
Well, can you?
As a matter of fact, yes. All right. It's not really part of my job, but I'll admit that I'd like to see Bannerman's face if the ruling goes against him.
Then all we have to do is make sure that everybody gets to the hearing all right.
The hearing that Bannerman and all his hired guns are going to be doing their damnedest to stop.
Well, I never said it would be easy.
As soon as they had gotten something to eat and let their horses rest for a while, Matt and Preacher left Smoke in Buffalo Flat with Halliday and headed back to Crazy Bear's village.
We may have to dodge some of Bannerman's gun wolves along the way.
And might even have to kill a few of them, which would be just fine with me. That's just more we won't have to kill later.
You still think it'll come to that if we manage to get that hearing to take place and the judge rules in favor of the Crows?
Them's a couple of mighty big ifs. And yeah, even if both them things happen, I don't expect Bannerman to swallow them and let it go. I've seen greedy sons of bitches like him before. When it comes down to the nub, he'll try to take what he wants and everything else be damned.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I know I am.
They had gone several miles up the valley, following the no man's land that ran between the creeks, when they spotted half a dozen riders on their right, about 300 yards away.
Preacher?
I see them. Probably spotted them before you did. You reckon they're some of Bannerman's bunch?
The men suddenly spurred toward them, urging their horses forward at a gallop.
It's all the proof I need. Let's go!
Ain't gonna hit us at this range. Ain't gonna catch us, neither.
Matt saw that was true. It only took a few minutes to reach the creek. And that time, the pursuers had closed the gap slightly. They were still well out of handgun range and hadn't stopped and dismounted to use their rifles. Matt and Preacher swung out of the saddles as their horses continued across the creek. The duo carried their rifles back to the trees and crouched behind the trunks. Preacher had brought his Winchester instead of his Sharp.
Range is too short for that big 50 of mine. I can make do with this piddling newfangled Winchester.
If everything was so much better in the old day, why don't you still carry that flintlock?
Don't you think I ain't thought about it?
One of the onrushing gunmen jerked in the saddle, but managed to stay mounted as he slowed his horse and hunched over in pain.
When a ball from one of them old muzzle loaders hit you, you went down no matter where you was hit.
Matt began to fire too. The two men poured a steady stream of lead into their attackers for several moments, wounding at least a couple more of Bannerman's men. The gunnies reined in, turned their mounts around, and fled in the face of that withering fire.
Look at them turn tail and run!
Yeah, they'll be running back to Bannerman to tell him that we're on our way to the Crow Village. We better get moving before Bannerman sends more men up here to cut us off.
Preacher and Matt arrived at the village later that afternoon. Crazy Bear strode forward to greet him, flanked by Sandy and Starwind.
See, you're up and around again?
You try making him rest for any length of time. You'll see what an impossible job that is.
Sort of like getting a federal judge to come in and rule on your claim on this land.
My request for a hearing has been granted?
Yeah. You didn't tell us about that.
I would have. I didn't want to get anyone's hopes up in case it never happened. When is the judge supposed to get here?
Tomorrow, if all goes as planned. Smoke's gonna see that it does. Then we'll be able to go into town and settle this.
I do not understand. Who is this judge you speak of?
He's a representative of the white man's government. He decides what's right and what's wrong.
You mean he decides that the white man is right and the Indian is wrong?
According to what we were told, this particular gent doesn't think that way. He'll rule on the facts of the case and follow the law.
When the moose grows wings and learns to soar like the eagle.
I'm with you, Crazy Bear. I don't put no stock in any law but this.
Preacher rested his hand on the butt of his .44.
Maybe it will come to that. But there's nothing wrong with trying the other way first.
Unless it gets you killed.
That's why we're here. To make sure that doesn't happen. We'll deliver you to that hearing tomorrow, Sandy, and see what the judge says. After that...
After that, devil take the hindmost.
In the morning, Matt went to the lodge where Sandy lived with his wife Robin while they were in the Crow Village. He knew the couple also had a house in Buffalo Flat and spent part of their time there. And they made regular trips back to St. Louis where Sandy continued his efforts to secure funding for an Indian school and perhaps eventually a university on the frontier.
Hello in there!
Sandy pushed aside the flap and emerged from the lodge dressed in his town clothes. His hair was cropped shorter than it had been the night before. Robin followed him from the teepee and hugged Matt. Moonfawn was with her, clutching at her mother's skirts and smiling shyly at Matt. Matt hunkered on his heels and grinned at the little girl.
Remember me? How's Gregor?
He's fine. He wants to go to town.
I'm sorry, little one. I've told you that it's too dangerous for you and Gregor to come with me today. You and your mother have to stay here with your grandparents.
I don't like that, Sandy. If you're going to be risking your life, I should be with you.
I'd rather have you here, so I don't have to worry about you. It's dangerous enough, the two of you staying here. We don't know what Bannerman will do. I'm hoping that he'll concentrate on what's happening in town today rather than out here.
Be careful. You know I couldn't stand it if anything happened to you.
I'll be fine. Matt and Preacher will see to that. Isn't that right, Matt?
Do my best.
Moonfawn clung to him for a moment.
Could I see Gregor for a minute before I go?
Do you want to tell him goodbye too?
No. He's been keeping something for me, and I need to get it back from him.
Moonfawn held out the doll. Matt frowned as he watched Sandy slip a couple of fingers under the buckskin outfit the doll wore. There must have been a little slit in Gregor's body under there, because Sandy appeared to be fishing around inside the doll. A few seconds later, Sandy withdrew his hand, holding between his fingers a tightly folded piece of paper.
What's that?
Sandy gave Gregor back to Moonfawn and straightened. He unfolded the paper and held it so Robin and Matt could see that it was some sort of official document. A grin began to spread across Matt's face.
Is that the deed to your claim?
Yes. I thought that would be a safe place to keep it, since Moonfawn always has Gregor with her and no one would think to look inside a doll's stuffing.
You mean she had it all along when those varmints kidnapped her?
That's right.
They never knew that what they were looking for was right under their noses. But I reckon you were counting on that, weren't you?
Exactly. We should get going. We don't want to be late for that hearing.
The three men rode out of the village, heading south toward Buffalo Flat. Sandy wore a bowler hat to go along with his suit. With the slightly European cast to his features that he had inherited from his mother Mala, he didn't look much like an Indian. That might work in his favor, Matt thought. Although legally, there wasn't any reason it should matter.
Do you think we'll run into any trouble between here and town?
I'd be mighty surprised if we don't. All along, Bannerman's been trying to keep this from ever going to court. He won't back off now.
Maybe we should have brought some of the warriors with us.
Maybe.
Well, then why didn't we?
You best worry about that later. Look yonder.
Matt glanced to his left, saw a group of riders emerging from a stand of trees.
They're over there, too.
Matt inclined his head to the right, where more riders had just come over a ridge.
Looks like they got us boxed in.
What are we going to do?
Make a run for it. Head for that knoll up ahead.
Suddenly, Sandy's pony stepped in a hole and went crashing down. Matt reined in hard.
Cover us!
Preacher yanked horse to a stop and whipped out his Winchester. Matt raced to the spot where Sandy had fallen. The young man had landed hard, but he didn't seem to be hurt. He was already scrambling to his feet. Matt extended his arm and leaned down from the saddle. Sandy grabbed Matt's wrist and swung up behind him.
Can your horse carry both of us?
Hide and watch.
Chase was on once more. Slugs whined around him as they ran a gauntlet of lead toward the top of the knoll. They reached it untouched, and the three men leaped off their horses and flung themselves down behind the rocks. Matt yanked his rifle from his sheath. Preacher held on to his Winchester. Both of them fired from prone positions as they sprawled behind the low rocks.
Keep your head down. All we have to do is hold them off for a few minutes.
Few minutes? What's going to happen in a few minutes?
You'll see.
Bannerman's hired killers had the knoll completely surrounded. They dismounted and hugged the ground behind rocks and hummocks of earth as they continued firing up at the three men atop the knoll. A couple of minutes of fierce fighting went by, but neither side did any real damage to the other.
Ha ha! It's about time!
About time for what?
For your father to play his cards in this game.
Dozens of Indian ponies suddenly appeared as if by magic, boiling up from the gully Matt had spotted earlier. The fighting was brief. Matt stood up and looked down the slope to see that all of Bannerman's gunhawks were dead.
Looks like that plan we hatched with Crazy Bear worked just fine.
You knew this was going to happen?
We couldn't imagine that Bannerman would let you reach Buffalo Flat for that hearing without trying to stop you. So we figured to lure his men into a trap by starting out for town with just the three of us, while Crazy Bear and some of his warriors followed us and stayed out of sight.
In other words, the three of us were the bait.
Call it what you want. We figured Bannerman would send most of his men out of here to stop you from getting to town while the rest of us went after the stagecoach with that judge on it. We've taken care of this bunch, so I don't reckon we'll have any more trouble between here and Buffalo Flat. Now it's up to Smoke to get that judge there safe and sound.
Smoke and Halliday left Buffalo Flat early that morning. following the stage road that led south to Casper and ultimately on to Laramie and Cheyenne.
There's an overnight stage stop down at the middle fork of the Powder River, close to where the river splits into three branches. That's where the coach will be starting from this morning, I imagine.
That's the way it was when I rode up here a few days ago.
The two men kept their horses moving at a steady pace, and they covered quite a few miles by mid-morning. If the stagecoach driver had started on the last leg of the journey at first light, as usual, Smoke and Halliday ought to be meeting the vehicle soon. It was only a few minutes after that thought crossed his mind when Smoke spotted a column of dust rising in front of him.
That'll be the coach.
Then Smoke stiffened in his saddle and rose in his stirrups, his eyes narrowing as he peered at a second cloud of dust not far behind the first one.
What's wrong?
Looks like somebody else is headed this way too.
Bannerman's men?
Could be. Out on those flats, it's hard to set up an ambush because there's not enough good cover. But those gun wolves could have gotten out of sight, waited for the stagecoach to pass them, then tried to overtake it from behind. I reckon that's what's happening right now.
Well, then we better get a move on.
That's just what I was thinking.
The gap between them and the two clouds of dust closed rapidly. After a couple of minutes, Smoke was able to spot the stagecoach, rocking and swaying as it careened along the trail. The driver had the team at a full gallop.
You take the right, I'll take the left.
The two of them split up, each veering to one side of the trail so the racing coach could pass between them. Dust swirled, choking and blinding them for a second as the big Concord stagecoach flew by. When the dust blew away and his vision cleared, he saw eight men on horseback thundering toward him and Halliday, who was drawing rein on the other side of the trail. Smoke did likewise and raised the Winchester to his shoulder. 5 men died in the initial bob. That left 3 hired killers still charging towards Smoke and Halliday. Smoke rammed the Winchester back in its sheath and drew both of his 44s. The range was close enough for handguns now. When the dust cleared, 3 more men lie dead on the ground. Smoke looked over to Halliday.
You all right?
Oh, yeah. That was the hottest shootout I've been mixed up in for quite a while. Brought back some memories. Not necessarily good ones.
I know what you mean.
Smoke looked over his shoulder and saw that the stagecoach had come to a stop several hundred yards away.
We better check on it. Make sure that judge is still all right.
They jogged their horses toward the coach. Before they got there, the door opened, and a stocky, powerfully built man stepped out holding a rifle. He wore a town suit, but his broad-brimmed tan Stetson and well-worn boots looked more like something a frontiersman would wear. He had a close-cropped dark beard shot through with gray, and he looked up at Smoke and Halliday with intense, keenly intelligent eyes.
Judge Starr?
That's right. Who are you?
Name's Halliday. I work for a law firm in Denver. This is Smoke Jensen.
The gunfighter?
Some call me that. The way I see it, I'm just a rancher.
A rancher with one of the fastest draws in the West, if not the fastest. I take it you gentlemen came out to meet me and escort me the rest of the way to Buffalo Flat?
That's right. We knew there was a good chance Reese Bannerman would try to stop you from getting there and conducting that hearing.
I won't allow any testimony out here on the trail that would prejudice my judgment. Save that for the hearing, gentlemen.
But those were Bannerman's men who were trying to kill you.
That assumes facts not in evidence. Now, shall we go?
Yeah, I reckon so.
Accompanied by Crazy Bear and 3 warriors, Matt, Preacher, and Sandy rode on to Buffalo Flat. The Indians drew a bit of attention, but they didn't cause a panic as they rode down the street. Folks were used to seeing the Crow around here. Jason Garrard emerged from his hotel and lifted a hand in greeting to Matt.
Mr. Garrard.
That's Mayor Garrard now. I've decided to go into politics.
Garrard then nodded to his son-in-law.
Sandy?
Hello, Mr. Garrard. It's good to see you again.
The federal judge will be on the stagecoach. He's going to hold a hearing about Sandy's claim to the upper portion of the valley. Is there a place in town big enough to have a hearing like that?
Sure, you can use the lobby of the hotel. Should be plenty of room in there, and we can bring in chairs from the dining room as well as a table for the judge.
That'd be fine. Thanks.
Gerard nodded to Crazy Bear and the three warriors.
Will the Indians be coming in?
I think that would be a good idea.
Well, all right. Having some savages around might not spook my guests too much.
Matt glanced at Crazy Bear, whose face remained as impassively ugly as ever. The men dismounted.
How are my daughter and granddaughter?
They're fine. We'll be spending more time in town soon.
I hope so. I want Emily to grow up knowing her grandpa.
It took Matt a second. Then he realized that Emily was Moonfawn's white name. She was a lucky little girl. She would grow up experiencing both worlds, Indian and white.
You and Sandy go on inside, Matt. Me and these fellas will stay out here. We ain't too fond of having hard roofs over our heads. Never quite got used to it.
All right, you keep an eye out for smoke in that stagecoach.
Gerard enlisted the help of his desk clerk and began preparing the hotel lobby for the hearing. Matt and Sandy pitched in. Before long, they had the sofas that normally sat in the lobby moved out of the way and had set up several rows of chairs from the dining room.
This may interfere with your business.
Not enough to worry about. Besides, having such an important proceeding here might just increase business in the long run.
A short time later, smoke arrived with Judge Starr in tow.
Did Bannerman make a try for the judge?
He sure did. He sent 8 men to stop the coach, and I'm sure if they succeeded, they would have killed Starr.
But they didn't, thanks to you and Halliday.
That was the plan. We carried it out.
That leaves the hearing. I wonder where Bannerman is. You don't think he went with any of his men to carry out those attacks, do you?
Not hardly. He'd want to be here in case his men failed to stop the hearing from taking place. He's probably been keeping an eye on the town, so I expect he'll show up soon.
A few minutes later, smoke proved to be a prophet. A dozen riders entered Buffalo Flat from the north end of town and came slowly along the street. Smoke, Matt, and Preacher watched them approach and recognized Reese Bannerman riding in the lead. Lou Torrance was just behind him and to his right. The other 10 men were cut from the same cloth as Torrance, hardened gunfighters whose killing skills were for sale to the highest bidder.
Looks like he saved the cream of the crop to come in town with them.
Or the worst of the worst.
That's because he knows this is where the final showdown will be, if there is one. If the judge don't rule the way Bannerman wants him to, he'll try to kill everybody on the other side and scare the townspeople and backing them up when the law comes in. He'll find a way to blame everything on us and Crazy Bear. He'll say we went loco and killed that judge before they gunned us down.
You think he'd really murder a federal judge?
Oh, I've seen fellas like Bannerman before. They get to thinking they're above the law. Man's law, God's law, any kind of law. And if they got enough guns on their side, sometimes they're right. So yeah, I think he'd try to wipe us all out. And if folks around here know what's good for them, they'd keep the truth to themselves.
Then it's up to us to make sure that doesn't happen.
Smoke hooked his thumbs in his gun belt and stepped to the front edge of the hotel porch as Bannerman and the crew of gun wolves pulled rein in the street.
If you're looking for the hearing, Bannerman, this is it.
Who are you?
That's right. We haven't met, have we? Name's Smoke Jensen.
I told you about him, Mr. Bannerman. He and the other Jensen are related somehow.
What about that filthy old codger?
Filthy, Emma. Well, I'd rather be a mite dirty on the outside than rotten on the inside like you, Bannerman. As for who I am, they call me Preacher.
Bannerman dismounted and looped his reins around the hitch rail.
Come on.
Smoke moved to block Bannerman's path as the cattleman started up the steps.
You plan on bringing that whole bunch in with you?
They have a right to come in. I hear like this is open to the public, isn't it?
Indeed it is.
Judge Starr stood in the front entrance of the hotel.
And I'd like to get started, so everyone come inside.
Starr looked at Crazy Bear and the other three crow.
Including you, gentlemen.
Wait just a minute. No offense, Your Honor, but you can't mean to let those savages attend.
They have a stake in the matter, and they're citizens, according to the Treaty of 1868 and subsequent judicial decisions.
Sandy stood behind Judge Starr and nodded. Clearly, he was familiar with the law regarding those matters.
All right, blast it. But it seems to me letting them in is making a mockery of the legal system.
I warn you, Mr. Bannerman, don't tell me how to conduct legal proceedings.
Sorry, Your Honor. I meant no disrespect.
Well, let's go.
Everyone filed inside. Bannerman consulted with a tall, slender man in an expensive suit. Smoke had never seen him before, but he recalled what Halliday had said about the Indian ring sending a lawyer to represent Bannerman. Judge Starr walked behind the table that had been placed at the front of the room. Everyone else took their seats.
Federal Court for the Western District, Fifth Circuit, is now in session. In the absence of a bailiff, I'll just say it myself, modesty be hanged. The Honorable Errol Starr presiding. This hearing is to establish the validity of a land claim by one Sander Little Bear. Is Mr. Little Bear present?
Yes, Your Honor, right here.
You have the documentation of the aforementioned claim, Mr. Little Bear?
I do, Your Honor. If I may approach the bench to introduce the deed into evidence.
Come ahead.
Bannerman looked at the lawyer, who jumped to his feet.
Objection, Your Honor. My client and I have not had an opportunity to examine this so-called deed before it is entered into evidence.
That's because I'm the one who'll examine it and determine its validity, counsel. Objection overruled.
Sandy took the deed from his coat, unfolded it, placed it on the table in front of Starr, and smoothed it out.
You'll note, Your Honor, the dates on which the claim was filed, approved, and the deed drawn up. You can see as well the official seal of the Department of the Interior granting provisional ownership of the land.
Starr took a pair of spectacles from his vest pocket, unfolded them, and put them on. He leaned forward to study the document intently. A minute dragged by and seemed longer in the silence that gripped the makeshift courtroom.
Provisional ownership dependent on certain conditions, such as making improvements. It's my understanding that this land is being used as hunting grounds by a tribe of Indians.
A band of Indians, yes, Your Honor. My father's people. He's Chief Crazy Bear.
Then if the land is in an unimproved state, the conditions of this grant of land haven't been met.
Your Honor, if you'll look at the dates again, you'll see that the term of the grant isn't up yet. In fact, I still have a year to fulfill them. In that time, I intend to have a house built for my wife and myself, a well dug, and a vegetable garden put in. I believe that will satisfy the conditions.
It will. But what about the rest of the land?
My father's people, my people, will be free to live and hunt there as they always have.
Your Honor, this is a perversion of the intent of the Homestead Act. It was meant to provide farms for civilized people, not some refuge for savages.
When you start speculating on the intent of the framers of a law, you venture onto shaky ground, counsel. The law says what it says, within reasonable interpretations, of course, and I see nothing in the law that denies what Mr. Little Bear is claiming.
Your Honor, please.
You'll get your turn in a minute.
Starr looked at Sandy.
Do you have anything else to say, Mr. Little Bear?
Not really, Your Honor. That deed speaks for itself. The Department of the Interior wouldn't have attached its seal if my claim was not a valid one.
Very well. If you have no other statement or evidence, you may sit down. Now it's your turn. I understand that your client is challenging Mr. Little Bear's claim to the land in question.
That is correct, Your Honor. My client attempted to file a claim on the same land, only to be denied because there was already a spurious claim on file.
Now, I'm sure the Department of the Interior didn't tell him the other claim was spurious. That's what we're trying to determine here.
Your Honor, surely you're not saying that you would allow a savage to take precedence over my client, a successful, well-respected citizen who owns one of the largest ranches in the territory.
Your Honor.
What is it, Mr. Little Bear?
I'm not an attorney, but may I object anyway?
On what grounds?
Relevance, Your Honor. My savageness has nothing to do with the matter at hand, nor does the success of Mr. Bannerman. I could be a Hottentot, and Mr. Bannerman could be Cornelius Vanderbilt, and it wouldn't have anything to do with anything.
Point taken, young man. Your objection is sustained. Do you have any actual legal argument, counsel, or are you simply appealing to emotion here?
Your Honor, it's in the public interest for my client to have that range as grazing land.
Putting up the so-called public interest as a false front for private business doesn't trump individual property rights, sir. And by God, I hope it never does. If that ever happens, this country can kiss its blessed liberty goodbye. Anything else?
No, Your Honor, I...
In that case, I rule that Mr. Little Bear's claim is valid, and there will be no interference with him during the term of his provisional claim, which of course can be revisited when said provisional period is up. Mr. Bannerman?
Yes?
You understand that my ruling means you're to keep your cows off that Indian land and leave them the hell alone?
I understand.
You understand what?
I understand this isn't over yet, dammit.
Bannerman stalked out of the hotel lobby, followed by Torrance and the other gunslingers.
By God, I'm going to hold that man in contempt of court!
Starr pointed at Smoke.
You there! Mr. Johnson, is it?
Yes, Your Honor.
I hereby appoint you and your three companions there as special federal deputies and empower you to arrest Mr. Bannerman.
You know what that means, Judge?
Indeed I do.
All right. You and everybody else had better stay inside.
Excellent advice. Mr. Jensen, you and your friends go get that son of a bitch.
Smoke nodded and went to the door. Matt, Preacher, Halliday, Crazy Bear, and the Three Crow Warriors were right behind him. As he stepped onto the porch, he saw Bannerman, Torrance, and the rest of Bannerman's gun hawks clustered across the street in front of the saloon.
Kill him! Kill them all!
Everybody, down!
Bannerman turned to run into the saloon just as Smoke sent a slug whistling past his head. The ranks of the gunmen closed in, preventing Smoke from getting another shot at the ruthless cattle baron. Crazy Bear and the other warriors joined in the battle. Arrows flew through the air and impaled gunmen. With one blow of his mighty fist, Crazy Bear crushed the skull of a man wielding an empty pistol. He didn't see a killer drawing a bead on him from behind, but Sandy, who had slipped out a side door in the hotel, did. He pulled back an arrow. Bullets from Preacher's rifle drilled a couple of the gunfighters, and Halliday knocked down another one with a well-placed shot from his revolver. A few yards away, Matt dropped two of the gunmen as he fired from behind the wagon. Then, he took off at a run after Lou Torrance. Torrance made a grab for one of the horses running free in the street.
Torrance! You ready to settle this?
You're a damn fool, Jensen! You and I ought to be on the same side again!
That'll never happen!
Each man had a gun in his hand. Torrance brought his up with blinding speed. Matt was just a hair faster. Back up the street, the last of the gunmen spun off their feet in the face of that storm of lead. Smoke raced past them, the acrid tang of burned powder filling his nose as he leaped onto the boardwalk in front of the saloon. He pressed his back against the building's front wall.
Bannerman, you hear me? Come on out and surrender! Your men are all either dead or out of the fight!
Go to hell!
Smoke went in fast. He rolled under the bat wings. Smoke's eyes picked up a staircase at the back of the room and followed it up to a narrow balcony where Bannerman crouched, firing down at him. It took less than a heartbeat for Smoke to react. Smoke stood up and kept his Colt trained on Bannerman as he approached the cattleman.
Damn you, Jensen. You'll be sorry you messed with me and my friends.
I'm already sorry you thought you were bigger than the law, Bannerman.
We are. You'll see. This isn't over, you fool.
Matt and Preacher walked into the saloon, followed by Halliday, Judge Starr, Crazy Bear, Sandy, and the Crow Warriors.
Is Bannerman dead?
I'm afraid so. He didn't want to be arrested for contempt of court, Your Honor.
He didn't want to face the fact that he was beaten and looking at enough counts of attempted murder to keep him behind bars for the next 30 years. but that's irrelevant now. The record will show that he was killed while resisting arrest, as were his men. What will happen to his ranch, I don't know. But thankfully, that's a matter for a probate court, not me.
You knew when you sent us after him that he'd fight.
Of course I did. Just like I knew he'd try to kill us all and cover up his crimes if somebody didn't stop him. I was raised on the frontier, Mr. Jensen. I know Bannerman's type. Men who have wealth and power, but are really just two-bit desperados at heart.
You got some more just like him in Washington, from what I hear.
You're probably right. And I intend to look into that. For now, though, this case is settled.
Star turned to Sandy.
You and your father can go home now, Mr. Little Bear, and live your lives. It would be a good idea if he'd get those improvements made before the end of the year.
Yes, Your Honor, I surely will.
Star looked around the room, gave everyone a curt nod, and departed.
Your wife's pa's gonna have a heap of cleaning up to do around this town, him being the mayor and all. Got dead gunslingers laying everywhere, not to mention all the busted glass to replace and the bullet holes to patch.
Yes, but if anyone can do it, Jason Gerard is the one. He's civilization personified, with all its virtues and its flaws, and you can't stop civilization.
Yeah, I know it. Ain't it a damn shame?
Smoke, Matt, and Preacher spent the next few days at Crazy Bear's village, visiting with their old friends and recovering from the violent clash with Reese Bannerman. But Smoke missed Sally, and Matt got to worrying that maybe Starwind was more interested in settling down than she let on at first. And Preacher? Well, Preacher hadn't let any grass grow under his feet for a long, long time, and he wasn't about to start now. The restlessness was inevitable. So the three men said their goodbyes, traded hugs and handshakes with Crazy Bear and his people, and mounted up. They rode off together down the valley, enjoying the magnificent beauty of the mountains around them.
Bannerman was right, you know.
About what?
This ain't over. That's what you're getting at, ain't it, Smoke?
That's right. Bannerman and this whole mess didn't really amount to much. Not to those hombres back in Washington who think they can make their fortunes even bigger on the land and the blood of other folks. This was like the opening move in a chess game, that's all. They'll try something else, and it's liable to be worse next time.
Well, then we'll keep an eye out, and if they get up to any mischief, we'll just stop them again. If you boys run into any of the varmints, you give a holler. I'll come running and lend a hand with the snake stomping.
Same goes for me. Whatever they get up to in the future, I don't want them getting away with it.
It's a deal. The West is a mighty big place, but I reckon as much as the three of us get around, and as many people as we know, we'll hear about it if this new Indian ring tries anything. Maybe we can keep it from getting as big and doing as much damage.
Yeah, well, in the meantime, I got a hankering to head out California way. Been a while since I seen them big old redwood trees. I reckon you're heading back to Sugarloaf Smoke.
That's right. It's been too long since I've seen a certain dark-haired beauty I happen to be married to. What about you, Matt?
I thought I'd stop at Dodge City and say howdy to Bat Masterson. He's a sheriff there now, and he promised me a deputy's job if I ever wanted one.
Now why in the hell would you want to wear a tin star in a rip-roaring hellhole like Dodge?
I figure it'd be a lot more peaceful than hang around with you two.
Matt lifted a hand in farewell and headed east.
Vaya con Dios.
So long, Smoke.
Preacher turned horse to the west.
Be seeing you.
Count on it.
Smoke rode on south toward home, knowing that he would see both of them again. More than likely, all hell would be breaking loose at the time, but at least they would be together. The same blood didn't run in their veins, but that didn't matter. Not one damn bit. They were family, and always would be.
The Family Jensen is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2010, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2012, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. performed by Mort Shelby, James Lewis, Thomas Penny, Michael John Casey, Thomas Keegan, Nanette Savard, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Bradley Smith, Ken Jackson, David Harris, Colleen Delaney, Yasmin Twazon, Christopher Graybill, Eric Messner, Johann Detweiler, David Coyne, Nathaniel Perry, Dexter Hamlet, Patrick Busink, Joel David Santner, Evan Casey, Drew Copus, and Tim Pabone. Additional Boot Hill Boys by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Colleen Delaney. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. Original music by Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio by Johann Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Family Jensen, check out William W. Johnstone's Smoke Jensen and First Mountain Man. Available in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
Thanks for talking to me, Scratch. It eased my troubled mind a little.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
You probably thought I was going to ask you to let me go, didn't you?
It wouldn't have done you any good.
I know that. That's why I didn't waste my time. You're not the sort of man who'd turn on his friends for a woman.
No, I sure ain't.
But what about a woman who knows where there's a fortune in greenbacks and gold?
When Scratch is confronted with a woman of deadly charm and persuasion, he contemplates throwing away everything he's ever known.
Bo would come after us.
You think so?
I know he would. He tried to track us down, sure as shooting.
I suppose I could wait a few more days. Even though being locked up like this is making me awful crazy, Scratch.
Oh, you can do it. Won't be much longer, and then the two of us can be together.
That sounds good.
Witness the ultimate betrayal in Sidewinder 6, Texas Bloodshed. Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.